All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Tzadik Hei, 95. Now we are starting from the third line of Tzadik Hei, the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, Misha Haya Nasui Beis Nashim, if a man was married to women, Umachar Es Sadeu, and he sold his field. Now we'll say that the case that we're dealing over here, Rashi says, Umachar Es Sadeu, HaMeshubar L'Ksuvos. He sold the field ultimately again that is encumbered to the ksuvas. Now Rashi over here phrases it in the plural. Others change it to just simply say like ksuvasa. The Mesrasa changes it. So he sells off encumbered property. So he sells off the property that was encumbered to the ksuva of the wife, of one of the wives. The kasva rishon lelokeach din udvarim inli imach. And I will say what happens. And the first wife goes ahead and writes to the purchaser, Dinu dvarim inli imach, I have nothing to do with you. Which Rabbi says is another way of saying, I am releasing my kisuva lien against the property. Okay? Hashnia motzia mehalokeach. So Rabbi says, listen to this. So Rabbi says, let's take this forward. So the husband owns a piece of property. And what happens? So the mice again, it was encumbered to the ksuva. Now, wife number one says to the purchaser, I'm releasing my lien from the property. I'm lifting my ksuva lien from the property. Husband dies, and there's no property in the estate. So what happens? Hashnia motzia mealokeach. So we'll say wife number two. Now remember, wife number two wants to get her ksuva. So what does she do? So she goes ahead and she goes to the purchaser, and she extracts the field from the purchaser in satisfaction of her ksuva debt. And then what happens? Verishona min hashnia. Then wife number one goes back and takes the property from who? From wife number two. And what's the logic behind that? Remember, again, wife number one has a prior claim to wife number two. Because remember, we established yesterday that the halacha is that wife number one is a balchov muktam. Wife number two is a balchov mu'ukhar. And if a balchov mu'ukhar, if a latter creditor goes in and sees his property in advance of an earlier creditor, so the ma'is again, the earlier creditor has the ability to take that property. So in this case over here, what's happened? Wife number two went and seized the property. The problem, of course, is there's still no property to satisfy the debt of wife number one. So what does wife number one do? She seizes the property from wife number two. And then what happens? About say, this is great. Valakeach min harishona. And about say, listen to this. And now the lokeach, the purchaser, right? The purchaser, the guy who bought the property from the husband during his lifetime, goes back and what? Seizes it from wife number one. Why? Why could he do that? Because remember, wife number one agreed to be mocheles. She agreed to forgive any type of claim against purchaser, against lokeach. Therefore, lokeach could go ahead and seize the property back from her. And I will say, now remember, once the lokeach seizes the property back from wife number one, then what happens, Rabbi Osai? Then number two takes it from the buyer. Number one takes it from number two. Buyer takes it from number one. Number two takes it from the buyer. And chozer chalila chalila. This process repeats itself over and over. Ad sheyasu pshara beinehem. Until they go ahead and they reach some type of pshara. They have to reach some type of compromise. Which Rabbi Osai is another way of saying they go to Beis Din, and essentially everyone is going to have some type of stake in this land. So they don't have to go to Beis Din. I should take that back. They just have to go ahead and reach some type of consensus between the three of them. V'chein balchov, the same halacha applies in a case of balchov and a case of a creditor. V'chein isha ba'alaschov. So too if the woman is the creditor. We'll discuss in the Gemara what these cases are. Says the Gemara, V'chi kasvalei mayhavi. Now, I remember, so the way the Mishnah opened up was like this. A man is married to two women, which obviously means they both have a lien against his property. He sells off a field to lokeach, to a purchaser. And wife number one comes over to the lokeach, to the purchaser, and says, Din udvarim einli asadazu. I have absolutely no claim, Din udvarim einli imach. I have no claim, nothing to do with you. So the Mishnah takes it for granted that when she writes those words, when she says those words, so the Maisa, it releases her lien against the property. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. V'chi kasvalei mayhavi. Why should that work? Just because she wrote him, Dinu dvarim einli imach, that releases her lien. I have a hatanya, we learned, Ha'omer lechaveiro dinu dvarim einli asadazu. Both say, if one man says to his friend, meaning also they're talking about partners. So two partners in a field, and one partner turns to the other and says, I have nothing to do with you with this field. I have no involvement in it. And my hands are removed from it. He doesn't have anything. Meaning that statement is meaningless. Also, which is another way of saying that if you have an ownership interest in something and you want to relinquish that ownership, you must. There are ways in which you have to say it. You can't just say, I have nothing to do with this anymore. You could say, I'm mafgir it. You could say, I'm making it hefgir. I'm going ahead and I'm relinquishing my ownership interest to you. But the lashon of, I have nothing to do with this property anymore, is not a proper lashon for relinquishing of ownership interests. If that's the case, then lemaisa, again, how does this wording work in the Mishnah? To which the Gemara answers, Hacha ma'askinon, what's the case over here? B'shekhanu mi'ada. Oh, where they made a kinyan. She made a kinyan, meaning the wife went over to the lokeach, and she said, not only do I have nothing to do with this field, but I'm backing up that statement with a kinyan. Rashi says, B'shekhanu mi'ada. V'amina ba'akosev le'ishto, de'hecha de'kanu mi'ada, mi'gufa shalkakhanu mi'ada. So I'll say, oh, maybe it's different. Dinu dvarim in the ainli imach doesn't normally work, but if there's a kinyan that's made, then einachinami the king. So we're talking about over here about a kinyan chalipin, a kinyan sudar. So essentially, what ends up happening is the purchaser would go ahead and give her the handkerchief, right? She would go ahead and in turn release to him her ownership interest, or I should say, her lien against the property. And Shalom al Yisrael. So the Gemara is suggesting from the fact that there's a kinyan, that would go ahead and bolster her ability to use this lashon. V'chi kanu mi'ada mayhavi. So I don't understand, even if she did the kinyan, why should it work? She could always turn around and say, what? Tema nachas ruachas sisi labayli. Well, say, this is very interesting. She could always say what? She could always say that it's true. I went ahead and I said to the purchaser, dinu dvarim eili imach, I have nothing to do with this particular parcel of property, or nothing to do with you. And we even did a kinyan, but I have to tell you the truth. You know why I did it? I did it to make my husband happy. Right? He wanted to sell the field. I didn't want to share his sale. But I did it to make him happy. Did I really have in mind to relinquish my ownership interest in the property? No. But I wanted to make him happy, so I did it. Milo tnand, have we not learned? Lakach mina isha chazer, lakach mina isha mikchobatal. Did we not learn that if a person went ahead and purchased a piece of property from the husband and then went ahead and purchased it also from the Isha, from the wife, in other words, let's say, look at Rashi's mom, mimikho batal. Ultimately, again, the purchase is batal. Now, what does that mean? That a man goes ahead and purchases a piece of property from a man. Okay. Meaning, Reuven purchases a piece of property from Shimon. And he realizes that Shimon has a wife, which means that Shimon's wife has a lien against this property. So what does he do? He goes to Mrs. Shimon, and he says, Mrs. Shimon, is it okay with you that I buy this property? And she says yes. She's, even if she says yes, nevertheless, there is still the ability for her to void the sale. Look at Rashi. Mikcho batal. Mashma legamri v'afiyu b'chayi habal. O ba'abasra makmina la ba'achas mi'osin shalosh shalos. O yichada la l'ksubasa. O kasav la b'socha ksubo shechnisa shalosh shumishala. So we'll say, remember, this sounds like she could even void the sale while he's still alive. And the Gemara ba'abasra explains that we're dealing over here with one of the properties that was set aside for the ksuva. So what do we see from him? She said explicitly, I'm okay with the sale. She said explicitly, I'm signing off on the sale. What do you see from here? Rather, what do you see from here? That even if she agrees to the sale, she has the ability later on to turn around and say, I didn't really mean it. I was just trying to make my husband happy. So now I understand the kasha. So remember, we're trying to figure out how the case of the Mishnah even gets off the ground. Because in the Mishnah's case, husband sold a piece of property, right? And then wife goes over to the purchaser, and wife says to the purchaser, I go ahead and I give up my rights in this piece of land. And the Mishnah seems to indicate that it works. So the Gemara says, how does it work? It only works with a kinyan. But even with a kinyan, the Gemara says, a wife has the ability to say what? Wife has the ability to say, Nachas rachas yisil bayli. I was just trying to make my husband happy. I didn't really mean it. So how does the case work? Amar Rabbi Zeira, Amar Rabbi Chista. Lo kasha. It's not a contradiction. Ha Rabbi Meir, ha Rabbi Huda. So we'll say, now remember again, so essentially we have two different cases going on over here, right? We have our Mishnah, and our Mishnah seems to indicate that Lamaisa, again, a woman can relinquish rights in property. I should say a woman could relinquish her claim or her lien against marital property versus the Mishnah in Meseches Gittin, which is what the Gemara just quoted above. Mishnah Meseches Gittin, which seems to indicate that Lamaisa, if you purchase a piece of property from a man and then go back and quote-unquote purchase it from the woman, even if she agrees, she could turn around and say, I didn't mean it. Nachas rachas sisi labayli. So the Gemara says, it's not a kasha, it's not a contradiction. Har Rabbi Meir, our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, Har Rabbi Yehuda, and the Mishnah in the Gittin is Rabbi Yehuda. This Sanya, listen to this. Kasav l'rishon v'lo chasmalo. Both say, if Rashi says, Kasav l'rishon, shtar mechar al sada achos. So if the owner of the land wrote a bill of sale, a document of sale to a purchaser, v'lo chasmalo, but he did not go ahead and sign it, and therefore, again, the sheni v'chasmalo, but then he wrote a document selling the same piece of land to a second person, and he signed it. Look at Rashi. V'lo chasmalo, lo hodis ba'os ha-mecher, v'kasav shtar acher l'lokeach sheni, asad acheres v'chasmalo. So we'll say, so in this case over here, he's writing a document to purchaser number one, but he didn't sign it, meaning, because going back to yesterday's discussion about Edi Chasima Karsi, Edi Mesira Karsi, and he wrote a document to number two, v'chasmalo, and he signed it. So what's the halacha? Ibda v'chasmalo. So what's the halacha? Ibda ksuvasa. Now listen to this case. In this case over here, so a husband's writing a shtar, selling a piece of property to a purchaser. And in the first shtar, lo chasmalo, Rashi says, lo hodis ba'osamechar. So the wife did not sign off on that purchase, meaning she did not agree to relinquish her ksuvalin rights on that purchase. The cost of shtar acher l'lokeach sheni al sada acheres v'chasmalo. So we'll say, now watch this. A little bit of a different case. So husband is selling off property. So when he sells off parcel number one, so she does not agree to lift her lien against that property. But then when he sells parcel number two, two different parcels, so the mice again, she agrees to lift her lien against the property. So what's that halacha? Ibda ksuvasa. She has lost her ksuva. So what does that mean? Ibda ksuvasa. Im ein sham b'nei chorin shari harishon omer haninach dilech makom ligbos himenu. So we'll say, if when the husband dies, there is no other property in the estate, she has lost her ability to collect from unencumbered properties. From encumbered properties, from sold properties. So we'll say, let me explain the logic over here. When husband sold property number one, so there's a reason to say when husband sold property number one, so from the woman's perspective, husband still has a second property from which she can go ahead and collect her ksuva. When he goes ahead then and sells the second piece of property, and what does she do afterwards? She says to the purchaser, I'm releasing my lien, my hold from that second property. So now what happens? Husband dies, and she wants to collect her ksuva. So where does she go? Purchaser number one. And what does purchaser number one tell her? You can't collect from me, because at the time that I bought the property, there was still unencumbered property for you to collect from. The fact that you then went ahead and released your lien against that subsequently sold property does not put me on the hook to satisfy your ksuva. Rabbi says, so therefore, again, she can't collect from number one, and she can't collect from number two. Why can't she collect from number two? Because she released him. These words are Meir. Therefore, Meir will say she's stuck. Rabbi Huda says, no, Yecholi Kishe Tomar, Nachas Ruach Asisem Asisi Labaili. Rabbi Huda says, it's not true. She could turn around and say that I am going to collect from the second one. Why? Because I didn't mean it. Even though I said I was releasing my lien, I didn't really mean that I was releasing my lien. I was just trying to do something nice for my husband. Atem ma lachem alai. What do you want from me? So Rabbi Huda therefore says that Lamaisa, she could actually collect her ksuba from the second purchaser. The Rebbe saw some lahacha Rabbi Meir. Therefore, I will say, Rebbe in our Mishnah over here, meaning in Maseches Ksuvos, so he establishes our Mishnah like Rebbe, namely that when a woman goes ahead and says that din udvarim ein li'imach, when I'm releasing my lien on the property, he passes like Rabbi Meir that says what? That such a release actually works. V'sasam lahasam Rabbi Yehuda. And in the Mishnah Maseches Gittin, Rebbe, the codifier of the Mishnah, is passing like Rabbi Yehuda, who says what? That a woman does have the ability to say to her husband, to the purchaser, that nachas ruach asisi the baili, that I was only going ahead and doing something nice for my husband.
How does that work? What's the halacha then?
You mean bottom line?
Yeah.
Oh, we're gonna see. We're not finished yet. So I'm Rav Papa said begrusha v'divrei hakol. So we'll say Rav Papa chooses to interpret this a little bit differently, and Rav Papa says that the case over here is like Fine. So Rav Papa, I'm sorry. So Rav Ashi, Rav Papa says that the whole case over here is dealing with the grusha. That Rav Papa, listen to this. That she, now here's the chat. If you say that the case over is dealing with the grusha, Rav Papa, the one taina that a grusha can't have is nachas ruach hasisi lebayli. Right? If a divorced woman is not going to say, I was trying to make my husband happy. Right? Obviously, that's not her intention. So therefore,
maybe got married.
No. They're talking about where it was sold. She's relinquishing rights after she was divorced. After she was divorced. Well, so let's qualify this. So
before she got her two.
Yeah. I can pass around the mic. So let's see. So Amarat Papa. So Papa says Bigrusha, the Divri Hakol. So we'll say, so what does this mean? Look at Rashi. Amarat Papa, Masnisin Kisha Haisa Grusha, the Akarkach Kasvalokeach Kane. So let's say the keys over here is where what? She's divorced already, prior to Ksuva collection, and then she goes ahead and she's writing this to the people who purchased property from her husband while they were still married. So the idea of here, I will say, is like this. So now, when a woman writes that, if and she's divorced, so we can know, even those who want to say that a woman could have a claim, nachas ruach hasisi labayli, that even though I forgave my rights to the land, I didn't really mean it because I was just trying to make my husband happy. Everyone will agree that what? That only applies, of course, in a context where she's still married. But lamaisa, again, if she's a grusha, then the only way to interpret her phrase when she releases her lien is how? That she's actually releasing it. That is, they can't say nachas ruach hasisi labayli. Rav Ashi says, well, say, remember, these are all just ways of trying to reconcile the Mishnayis, our Mishnah, with Maseches Gemara, really more appropriately trying to understand our Mishnah, the Divrei HaKol. So Rav Ashi says, Kula Rabbi Meir hi. No, in fact, the entire Mishnah reflects the view of the position of Rabbi Meir. What did Rabbi Meir say? Va'ad kan, look, so also remember, Rabbi Meir was the one who said that a woman has the ability to say nachas ruach hasisi labayli. That even if she forgives her rights in land, she has the ability to say, I was just doing it to make my husband happy. Va'ad kan lo kam Rabbi Meir hasam ela b'shnei lekuchos. Listen, this is very interesting. Now, Rabbi Meir only espoused his position when there are two different purchasers. The amrila, because we say to her, i'isa d'nachas ruach avdus lekama i'baylach l'me aved. That, listen to this, that if you really are claiming that you were trying to make your husband happy, then I will say, then what? Then you should have forgiven your rights with both purchasers. But if you only go ahead and forgive your rights with one purchaser and not the other, you can't claim nachas ruach hasisi labayli. Ava b'lokeach echot. But if it's just one purchaser, let's say one purchaser who is buying, let's say, two parcels of land, afilu Rabbi Meir mode. Even Rabbi Meir will agree that what? That she can say nachas ruach hasisi labayli. She could even claim again with one purchaser. I was going ahead, Miro says, so with one purchaser who was, let's say, purchasing more than one parcel of land, even if she did not explicitly say, I forgive my rights in both parcels of land, because it's the same purchaser, she can claim nachas ruach hasisi labayli. If it's two different purchasers, and she says nachas ruach hasisi labayli by one, but not by the other, that argument doesn't hold water. So Gemara says, I feel like mas nisin, and what's the Mishnah? The cause of law, the cause of lay la'acher. And ultimately, again, the case of the Mishnah is where what? Where Lemaisa, again, she wrote this to one of the Kedrashi, Bidikas of Habal La'acher, Kodem Lazeh, Velo Chasma Lo, Ulazeh Chasma. So we'll say the case of the Mishnah, therefore, is what? Where Lemaisa, again, husband did two different purchases. To one of them, she said, not two different purchasers, Lachas Ruachasis Labayli, and one she didn't. And therefore, again, Rabbo says, we just established, everyone's going to agree, which is intuitive, everyone's going to agree that if husband sells off property to two different purchasers, and one she claims, I forgave my rights to make my husband happy, but the other one she didn't forgive her rights, that we don't believe that claim of nachas ruach hasisi labayli, because since she's forgiving for one and not for other, we take her claim seriously and we consider those rights or that lien to truly be forgiven. Tanan hasam. So what do we learn there? This is another interesting halacha. So we cannot go ahead and collect from nechasim mishubadim, encumbered property, in a place where there is nechasim b'nei chorin, in a place where ultimately, again, there is unencumbered property, v'afidu hein ziburis, and even where what? Even when it's sefir. So I'll say, remember, we actually established this yesterday. You remember, again, the halacha is that if you're a baal chov, if you're a creditor, so what type of property, or actually it was 2 days ago, what type of property do you collect from? You left Beinonis, very good. You collect from middle tier property. So let's say Rabbi Osai again. Now the halacha also is that if a creditor has unencumbered property, you can't go after encumbered property while there's still unencumbered property. I'm saying encumbered is the wrong word. You can't go after if the debtor owns property. You can't go after sold property if there is debtor owned what we'll call free property. Now the chiddush of that is even true of what? Even if the only property that the debtor currently owns is ziburis. So even though as a creditor I'm normally entitled to go out and collect beinonis, but if all the creditor has is ziburis, but one second, he sold off some beinonis, I can't go after those sold properties. I have to collect that which is owned by the debtor at the time that the debt becomes due, even if it's ziburis. So listen to this case. There's a very interesting case. So let's say again, let's play this out. I lend a Reuven $10,000. And what happens? And Reuven had, at the time that I lent him money, he had three fields. Subsequently, by the time that it's time to go ahead and collect, he sold off two of those fields. Fine, but no problem. He's got a third field still that's Baruch Hashem worth $10,000. So all is good. And then what happens? Ishtadof. Ishtadof means then the field is destroyed. Field is flooded, right? Natural disaster just destroys the field. Now look at Rashi. Ishtadof b'nechori la'achar shelokhu halakuchos. Now, in this case over here, this was after Reuven sold off the first two fields. So what happened? So the B'nai Chorin field, the unsold field, was destroyed. Natural disaster. So we'll say, so now the Gemara asks, Ishtadof B'nai Chori, so the Gemara says, Ishtadof B'nai Chori, Mao Delitrof Mimishibadi. Can you go ahead and collect from Nechasim Mishubadi? Now we'll say, now the Gemara is asking a very interesting case. See, what the Gemara is asking is like this. When the first two purchasers purchased their land from the debtor, so it's true they knew that the debtor had a $10,000 debt, but they also knew that what? Also knew what? That he had a field to go ahead and satisfy those debts. So the Shailin now is, now that the $10,000 unsold field is destroyed, so does the lien of the loan devolve back upon the sold properties? The Gemara is asking is a fundamental shaila, that if you go ahead and you purchase property from a debtor, but the debtor has sufficient assets to satisfy the debt from property that he owns. So do we say that once that is the case, that therefore the lien is lifted from the sold properties forever? Or do we say again that lemaisa, no, they're lifted as long as what? There is that free property. But should that free property disappear, that lien devolves again upon the sold properties. The nafkamina, of course, would be in this particular case, where debtor had a property which he planned on paying me back with. It was destroyed. Now the shaila is, can I go back to the purchasers of the properties in order to satisfy my debt? So the Gemara says, Mao delichov mishan tashma, kas of the rishon velo chas malo. The Shani Vachas Malo. So we'll say this, going back to what we just quoted before, a man sells off his property, the wife agrees, the wife did not yield her rights in the first property, but she did yield her rights in the second property. What's the halacha? Ibda ksuvasa. She has lost her ksuva. Is what we said before. V'isakadaitcha, because also remember this opinion is reflecting the idea that she signed off on all of her rights. V'isakadaitcha, ishtadof b'nei chori tarif mishibadi. And if you want to say in a case of where, let's say, the unencumbered field, the unsold field, was destroyed, a creditor should be able to go back and collect from sold properties. Nihi de ibdak suvasa misheni, mirishon miyatigbi, even though she lost it. So we'll say, in the case of the woman, when she signed away her rights in the second field, it's true she signed away her rights in the second field, but she should be able to collect her ksuva from the first one, to which the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, my ibda, inachinami, what does it mean when the Braisa says that she lost her ksuva? Ibda Mishini means she only lost her ability to collect from the second. Amar Rav says it doesn't make sense. Shtei Tshuvas Padavar. I can raise two contradictions against that argument. Number one, Chada de Ibda Lagamrei Mashma. Number one, the Lashon of Ibda sounds like what? She lost in totality. Va'o Tanya, furthermore, we learned, Lava Min Ha'echad Umachar Nechasav L'Shnayim. If a person borrowed from one, and then he went ahead and he sold off his properties to two other people. So I borrowed money from Reuven, and then I went ahead and I sold off my properties to Shimon and Levi. Because of Bal Kov Lo Keach Sheni, I borrowed from Reuven and sold property to Shimon and Levi, and Reuven comes along, and because of Bal Kov Lo Keach Sheni, and Bal Kov goes ahead, Reuven goes ahead, creditor, goes ahead and writes to the second purchaser, to Levi, din udvarim ein li imach. I have no claim of my loan against your property. Ein lo alokeach rishon klum. So Reuven can't go ahead and collect from Shimon. See here, this case is very interesting. So again, remember, one more time, I'm borrowing money from Reuven. I borrowed $1,000 from Reuven. And then what happened? After the loan, I sold off two pieces of property, each worth $1,000, to Shimon and Levi. Reuven comes along and comes to Levi and says, Levi, dinu dvarim ein li imach, I'm releasing my debt lien, because remember, he has a lien against those properties, because those properties were sold after the date of the loan. I'm releasing my lien against your property. So the Braisa says, what's the halacha? Ein lo alokeach rishon klum. Reuven can't come and collect anything from Shimon, the first purchaser. Why not? Because again, listen to this. Because Shimon can say to Reuven, you have no right to collect from me. When I bought my property, you still had a property to collect from. Which is another way of saying that, Lamaisa, again, your lien was against Levi's property as well. I left you property to collect from. You chose to release that lien against Levi. That's your business. But don't come back to me. So the Gemara says, so what do you see from there? You see from here that Lamaisa again, that the lien is lifted. To which the Gemara says, Hasam, Ihu da'afsid nafshei bi'adayim. But say, you can't compare this case. Remember, we're trying to figure out the case of where I lent Reuven $10,000. Reuven had three fields, each worth $10,000. He went ahead and he sold off the first two. There was a third left. And then what happened to that third? It was destroyed. Natural disaster. So the shaila now is, can I go back and collect from one of those sold fields? So the Gemara wanted to posit that you see from here that when there is property left in the estate, so the lien is lifted from the other sold properties. So to over here, lemaisa again, I should say, that once there was unsold property in the estate, therefore again, even though now it was destroyed, nebach, it's a bad thing, but lemaisa, once there was unencumbered, unsold property in the estate that was worth the value of the debt, that should lift the lien from everyone else. To which the one says, how can you compare those cases? Hasam ihu da'afsid nafshe bi'adayim. Rabosai, in the case of where Reuven, of where the creditor goes ahead and lifts the lien against the second party, he's doing that himself. So of course, again, I'll say, if he's lifting the lien against the second party, and now he wants to come to collect from the first purchaser, of course the first purchaser says, what are you talking about? Because you decided to release your halachic lien against the property of the second purchaser, you think that you have a right now to come back against me? Of course not. You caused this yourself. As opposed to what Rabbi say, the case of where the property that I was going to collect from was destroyed through no fault of my own, through no human intervention. It just got destroyed. In that case, one can make the cogent argument that what? That my lien is there and I should be able to collect from sold properties? To which let's go a little bit back. I'm a little of Yimar Ravashi. So Rav Yimar said to Ravashi, so Vaha, Amud Beis, Vaha, Maisim B'chol Yom. But Rabbi said, listen to this. So this is fascinating argument. So Rav Yimar says to Ravashi, let's say, now this is not a halachic argument. This is a circumstantial argument. So Rav Yirmiyah says to Rashi, but we do this every single day. Now we do what every single day. Look at Rashi. Listen to this. So Rav Yirmiyah says to Ravashi, but every single day this case comes up. What case comes up? That I lent money to Reuven. Reuven had a field that was worth $10,000. I lent him $10,000. So right, he had two fields that he sold off for $10,000 each. And then he had an unsold third field. And then that third field got destroyed. And this happens every single day, says Rav Yirmiyah Ravashi. And what do we paskin? We paskin that the creditor is permitted to go and seize sold properties. Because Lamaisik and Abosai, his lien is again. Remember again, this is very important. When you go ahead and when you lend someone money, that lien is against their entire estate. So Abosai, I want to be clear. Now, obviously, the parties could stipulate differently. For example, let me make one thing clear. If I were to lend Reuven $10,000, and Reuven says, okay, I'm lending the money, and I'm identifying field C, that is your collateralized field, that's yours, in the event that I don't pay you back cash, that's your field. And now, again, understood in that transaction is what? That I do not have a lien against any of the other properties, then in Achinami, parties can absolutely, and I'm sure, by the way, that must have been done often. Because if it wasn't done often, it's very difficult to sell your property with a lien against it. So lemaisa, again, what the Gemara is talking about over here is if you have an unspecified loan, if I lend Reuven $10,000, it's understood that my loan is secured against his estate. So even if at the end of the day there was unsold property, yes, That is the first place I go for collection. But should something happen to that piece of land, I have absolutely every right to go back to people who bought properties after the date of my loan to Reuven, and I have the ability to seize those properties in satisfaction of my debt. So Rav Yemer says, Rav Ashi, I don't understand what we're talking about over here. We do this every single day. Dehu Gavra, listen to this. Dehu Gavra, the Mishkan LaParadeis LeChaver, LeEsar Shanin. Listen to this. There was an individual who pledged an orchard to his friend for 10 years. So we'll say, now what's the chap over here? Now what this case probably was, look at Rashi. So actually, Rashi's Paradesa Kerem is a vineyard. Le'eser shanim, shiochlena eser shanim v'taksu le'baylim below mos. So I'll say the case over here probably was like this. Reuven lent me $10,000. So what happened? Instead of going out and paying him back $10,000, I gave him my vineyard for 10 years. Let's assume for a moment that the output of the vineyard is established at $1,000 a year. So I gave him the vineyard for 10 years, and that's how I'm going to, and after 10 years, he's going to give me back the vineyard, and we're settled up. And what happened? The kash l'chamish, the vineyard dried up. I don't know if dried up is the right word, but it dried up. Rashi says his skin. Actually, it prematurely aged. It prematurely aged, which is another way of saying it's not producing anything, right? It's not producing anything. So 5 years into this arrangement, the vineyard's dead. Because vule tirfa, and I will say, so what happened? So what happened? Remember again, Reuven was going to lend me money. So now Reuven goes to Bezin and says, Silber still owes me 5 years. He owes me $5,000. So I'll say, now what's the chap? Remember, what's a tirfa? We're experts in this. What's a tirfa? A tirfa is a document of collection. So a tirfa is a document that Beis Din says, Silber owes Reuven $5,000. And again, Reuven has the ability to collect that from where? From where? Sold property. Says a shtar tirfa. So we'll say, Hasamnam. So we'll say, so what do you see from here? Now here's a perfect example. What's this case? Here I gave Reuven a field from which to collect his debt, and then what? Something happened to the field, no fault of my own, no fault of him. Something happened. So, and yet, what did Beis enable Reuven to do? What did they enable him to do? They enabled him to collect from sold properties. So you see from here that what? You see clearly, Rav Yemer says, Rav Ashi, you see from clearly that Lamaisa, even when the debtor has an unsold, unencumbered property, and he gives that, in this case, he actually gave it to the creditor, and the creditor began using it, and then something happened to it, the creditor has the right to go ahead and collect the rest of that debt from sold properties.
Does he have ownership of the property, or does he just have rights to it?
In this case, he's getting rights to the produce, but he would technically be able to seize other pieces of property. He would own those properties. So says the Gemara, Hasam Nami, Inu Hu Da'afsidu Anaf Shayu. So this is a very interesting answer. In this case over here, the truth is, they caused themselves the loss. Now, what does that mean? Look at Rashi. Ihu Afsid Anaf Shayu, Lokeach Shalakach Sadeh, Miad zeh mishkein keren zeh ba'achrayus lo'ochlo yutshanim. But so listen to this. So the Gemara suggests that if you go ahead and the person who purchased this property from, remember again, from me, I'm the one who owes Reuven the money. So someone who purchases the property from me, knowing that I'm going to be paying off my debts by giving someone my vineyard. So someone who buys property in such a situation is putting themselves in peril. Why are they putting themselves in peril? Kevan dehava yadid de pardisa avidikish. Because people know that sometimes orchards or vineyards simply stop producing. He ultimately should not have bought it. Well, so this is an interesting idea. The idea is that when you're buying property from someone, so let's say if somebody's buying property from me, now we'll say anyone who buys property from me is going to do a title search. Right? They want to see ultimately again who has liens against my property, who doesn't have liens against my property. They're going to discover that I owe Reuven $10,000. They're also going to discover that the only asset I have to my name at this point in time is a vineyard. So B'pasha Sabosai, remember again, a vineyard itself is not necessarily worth $10,000, but being able to use it for 10 years can produce that amount. So now they also know that vineyards sometimes just simply stop producing. Therefore, when they purchase that field from me, they know there's a distinct possibility that should my creditor not be able to reap his entire debt from my vineyard, he's coming after the people who buy my fields. Therefore, essentially, the person who purchases it almost compromised themselves by purchasing a field from a guy like me under my current circumstances. The Hilchos Rabbah say, what is the halacha? Ishtadof b'nei chori, tir from mishabadi. Rabbah say, and this is the halacha l'maisa. So halacha l'maisa, if something happens to the unsold, unencumbered field, the creditor absolutely has the right to go out and purchase and take back properties from other purchasers. I'll say, so let me clarify this. So what this means is the following. If I lend a Reuven $10,000, and at the time of the loan, Reuven had three fields, each worth $10,000, two of them he subsequently sold off, one of them he purposely left in his possession for the purpose of paying me off. And it was my intention to collect my money from that field. And the day before I'm about to collect it, there's a flood and it totally ruins the field. The halacha is that what? I have the ability to collect from any of those sold properties. Any of those properties sold after the date of my loan. I will say, so the idea that the halacha is saying is that when you loan someone money, you have a lien against their entire property. And even if it appears circumstantially clear that collection is going to occur from one particular piece of property, nevertheless, that lien is not lifted from any of the other properties until the point that collection is actually made from that unencumbered property. Therefore, again, should collection become impossible from the unencumbered property, creditor has the ability to go back and collect from sold properties. Amar Abaye, nechasi lech v'acharayach leploni. It was another interesting case. So Abaye says, if a man says to a woman, that says to a woman, Rashi qualifies this over here as saying, Amr lepnuya, nechasi lech v'acharayach leploni. He's saying this to a single woman. I'm giving you this property, and after you die, I want it to be inherited by so-and-so, by Ploni. Va'amdavani, he says, and then what happens? She gets married. So the Baal, her husband, becomes a purchaser of this property. Ve'ein la'acharayich b'makom Baal klum. Well, this is an interesting case. So remember, I give a woman a piece of property, and I say, I want you to use it, and after you're finished using it, either you're finished using it because you die or because it's no longer useful for you, I want you to convey ownership to A. Right? And then what happens? Then she gets married. So the halacha is that chain is broken and the husband becomes the owner of that property after the wife dies. So Kiman, whose opinion is this? Like Kiaitana, Tisanya, Nechasi Lech Vacharayach Leploni, that if a man says to a woman, this property is for you and afterwards I want you to give it to Ploni. So what's the halacha? Yarat Harishon Umachar Hasheni. So excuse me, Yarat Harishon Umachar Hasheni. So we'll say, so now again, what happens? If you look at Rashi for just a moment, Rashi says over here, no, I'm sorry, not yet. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves. So Yarad Harishon Machar Hasheni, Yarad Harishon Machar Hasheni Motzi Miad Lekuchos. So we'll say ultimately again, if the first party were to go ahead and sell it to someone else, the second party, the Acharayich, would be able to remove that property from anyone who purchased it. Divrei Rebbe. Rebbe Shimon Gamliel says, Ein L'Sheni Elamash Hashia Rishon. It's not true. The Sheni, the second one, has only what the first one left over. So the Maisik and Abosai, if the first one left over something, the second one gets it. If the first one left over nothing, second one gets nothing. Umi Amra Abai Hachi, did Abai really say this? Vamra Abaye Eiz Hu Rasha Arum. Abai says, what is Abosai? A Rasha Arum literally means, like a literally translated as a naked, wicked person. The idea of it is it's cunning wickedness. What is the example of a wicked person who's cunning? Zahamasi Itza Limkar Ben Chasim. This refers to the one who goes ahead and gives someone the Itza to sell property, like Reb Shimon Gamliel. Because we also remember again, the idea of Reb Shimon Gamliel is, Reb Shimon Gamliel holds that in this kind of case, where a person gives another person property and says, this is for you, but after you use it, I want you to go ahead and give it to Sheni, and then they go ahead and they sell it. Technically speaking, the second person, the Acharayich, has the ability to go ahead and extract those property from the people who they were sold to. So the Gemara says, Mika Amar, Tinase, is the Mishnah telling us, or is the Halacha telling us that she should get married? Nises Kamar, rather it's just saying if she does get married. The Rabbi says, again, we're not telling her that she should get married, we're telling her that if she does get married, her husband would have the ability to disrupt this chain of property succession. Va'amra Abaye says, Nechasi lech v'acharayach leploni u'machra. So what happens? Rabbi says the following case. A man gives a woman a piece of property, and he says, this property is for you, and afterwards it goes to Ploni, u'machra, and Rabbi says, she was married, and then she got married, and then she sold it. Umesa, and then she dies. Habal miotzi miyad alakuchos. The husband has the ability to extract this property from the purchasers. Va'acharayich miyad bal. But then Rabbi say, watch this. But then again, the second person who was aligned for property succession has the ability to extract it from the hands of the husband. And now watch this. V'lokiach miyad acharayich. And then Rabbi say, the purchaser, the man who purchased property from the woman, has the ability to go ahead and and extract the property from the achrayach, from the second person who got the property after the wireball, because that person purchased the property with achrayas, with responsibility, umokmina lekula biyada delokeach. But ultimately, we go ahead and we put all of that property back in the hand of the purchaser. So we'll say this is another interesting case of one of these cyclical seizures, which we had in the Mishnah as well. So Gemara says, Maishna mehadisnan vechozeres chalila achiyasu pshar b'nein. Rabbi said, what the Gemara asks is the following. So remember, in the Mishnah, we also said one of these cases of cyclical seizures. What was the case? The case is where a husband sells a piece of property, right? A woman's husband sells two pieces of property, and woman says to, or even one piece of property, woman says to the purchaser, dinu dvarim ein li'imach. And then what happens? Remember, only wife number one did that. Then husband dies. Wife number two seizes the property from the purchaser because she didn't remove her lien. Then wife number one seizes the property from wife number two to satisfy her ksuva debt. Then purchaser goes back and what? Seizes it from wife number one because wife number one said, you told me, dinu dvarim ein li'imach. And what did the Mishnah say? Chozeres chalila chalila. This process repeats itself over and over until what? Until they make some type of a reasonable agreement. So why is it that in this case over here, so in the Mishnah we say it goes round and round and round until they decide on an agreement, and yet in this case over here that we just also quoted, which creates a cycle, we say that how do we resolve the cycle? We put the property back in the hands of the lokeach, to which the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Hasam Esloop Sida Lakulhu. Sibasa, in the case of the Mishnah, the reason why we have to make a pshara is because there's a loss for everyone. There's a loss for wife number one, there's a loss for wife number two, and there's a loss for Lokeach. Therefore, the only way to stem that loss for each of them is how? Esloop pshara, through compromise. However, Hacha, Lokeach Udi Islaip Sida. But in this case of Hirabosai, with the case of where the wife sold the property, the only person who has a real loss over here is the Lokeach. So because Lokeach is the one with the real loss, therefore, we give the Lokeach the property. So Raphram came and gave over the swing in front of Rav Ashi. So the Gemara says, "Mi Amar Abaye Hachi." But he said, "Did Abaye really say this?" If Amar Abaye said, "Nechasi Leich V'Acharayich Leploni," then what happens if a woman says, a man says to a woman, "Here's the property, is for you, and after you finish with it, I want you to give it to Ploni." Amdavin, he says, and then she got married. Her husband is considered to be a purchaser, and afterwards we both say the Baal gets full rights over that property, and the Acharayach, the person after her, so to speak, no longer has any rights. So both say Abai seems to be contradicting himself. Because before in the Abaye said that the Acharayach does have rights in the property. Here he's saying the Acharayach does not have rights in the property. To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you the distinction. Amalei, Hasam da Amarla Kishay Pnuya, Hachar da Amarla Kishay Nesua. So we'll say, listen to this. If a man says to a woman, I'm giving you this property, and afterwards, I want you to go ahead and have it, and afterwards, I want it to go to Ploni. So we'll say, listen to this. If she's a penuya, if she's single, so the assumption is that if she gets married, so the conveyor of the property has in mind that the husband's going to have rights in the property, because he's not going to go ahead and stem the flow of marital rights. Therefore, it's understood, as much as he's saying to the woman, I want you to have it, and then afterwards, I want you to give it to Ploni. If she gets married after the conveyance of the property, husband's going to have rights. However, listen to this. Hacha, da amrla kishinisua. But Rabosai, if a man gives a woman property, and he says to her, I'm giving you this property, and afterwards I want it to go to Ploni, and what? She's already married. It's clear that what? It's clear that what? That is cutting the husband out of this process. What is he saying to her? I want that other party to acquire the property, but I don't want your husband to have any rights in this property. We'll say, let's just finish this off. We'll have to stop over here with Vechein Balchov. So we'll say, just again, the two take-home messages, ultimately, again, of this, what we see is, number one, we saw the idea that ishtadof b'nei chori tafra mishabadi, that if you have free, unencumbered property, ultimately, again, lemaisa, Lemaisa, free unencumbered property that was the point of collection, and then something happens to that property, the creditor has the right to go back and collect from sold properties. That's number one. The other halacha that we also saw is that halacha lemaisa, in the case of lakach mina ish v'chazer v'lakach mina isha, mikcho batal. That in fact, again, I will say, in certain situations, even if a woman actively relinquishes her rights to the ksuva from certain properties, she does have the halachic right to say that I didn't really mean that I was giving up my rights. Rather, I could say, Nachas ruach asisi labayli. She could have the claim. Again, Abba say, we'll have to define under what circumstances she could say that, but Lamais has such an ability to say, I did, even though I said I was giving up my rights, I didn't really mean to give up my rights. I was just simply trying to make my husband happy. And Abba say, we'll stop over here. Shkoyach.